going to give a briefish. Dharma talk tonight. If you're looking to have a an early evening, the best time to duck out in the middle is now. And I want to encourage you to hold your mind in the open and receptive posture of zazen, but hold your body however is comfortable for you. But do please look up here. So I went to see the Dalai Lama, who was in town this weekend, and it was by and large lovely, but here was my favorite moment. So there we were in Gillette Stadium, in a stadium, right, with like 10,000 people. The Dalai Lama is sitting on a throne, in fact, on a stage, you know, with his coterie of monks there and his coterie of important lay people there, you know, in his, you know, his formal robes and whatnot. And before all this, there was like the Tibetan community of Boston, the kids thereof came up and did, you know, Tibetan dance presentations. And what was interesting, one thing that was interesting, was that they did them to him, which means they did them with their backs to all of us. But the so there it was, this super formal kind of thing. And he was talking, and in the middle of his talk on, in fact, I believe it was the Four Noble Truths, some guy got up and was walking and was, you know, going out bathroom or something like that, and was walking in front of his little stage area, and right in front of the Dalai Lama, he tripped. And you know, he stumbled, and so there the Dalai Lama was, and he was kind of talking, and this guy comes by, and he's like, "Oh!" And for me, that was a really a really kind of lovely moment. It reminds me, there's a Zen koan in which the student asks, "What are the 10,000 hands and eyes of Avalokiteshvara," which is to say, what is the true nature of compassion? How does compassion function in the world? And the master replies that it's like reaching behind your head in the middle of the night to adjust the pillow. And that was what I felt like the Dalai Lama was kind of showing, just the naturalness and the nothing specialness, and even in this formal, he's very important kind of context, it was so it was so easy for him to kind of connect to that he was already connected to the good heart that just wishes well for all beings. That's a little bit what I've been thinking about lately, but it wasn't actually what I was intending to give this talk about. So this last retreat that Thomas Way had a couple weeks ago, I gave a talk in the evening. The teachers gave larger formal talks, and then a couple of the lower down teachers like me gave little encouraging word talks in the evening, and I as I was sitting on the day that I was going to give this talk, a really cool image occurred to me, and that image and the topic of the talk was that there are times when our meditation is really lovely, and you know, we're maybe we're in this space of joy or peace or calmness or really just deep focus, and in a way those moments are like chocolate. And then there are other moments, either elsewhere on the retreat when we're sitting there in our little crappy zazen, and or the rest of our life, where we are, you know, struggling with our own habit patterns and our own conditioned responses and our inflexibility and so forth, or just our grasping or an aversion coming up, then those moments are like radishes, or whatever. Now, the thing is, though, is that we, because there are these moments that are like chocolate bars, we think that therefore all of life should be a big chocolate bar. And we think that when we encounter a little radish moment, that somehow, if only we were better Zen students, if only we were better people, if only we, our parents hadn't raised us in this way or the other way, you know, then this radish would be a chocolate bar. Or maybe through the power of our Zazen, we will transform this radish into a chocolate bar. I'm just going to Zen it into a chocolate bar. But it's a radish, you know, and radishes in their way are lovely. They're like a little fuchsia-colored food. Who's ever heard of a fuchsia-colored food, you know? And they got the little tail that comes out, and they got that they're kind of crunchy, and they make that noise when you chew on them, and and they got a nice kind of bitter quality to them. They're radishes, and you know, putting chocolate bars on your salad would be, frankly, gross. And as I was preparing for this talk, like I had all of these really, I was making notes for myself, you know, like all of these kind of brilliant things I was going to say at one point. And I got up there and I was looking at my notes, and when I was actually giving the talk, I was like, I don't know what that means. And you know, I was so not connected to this thing that, you know, was such a luminous image for me, you know, three periods ago. And I was trying to talk about it, and I kind of slogged my way through it, and it was frankly excruciating for me. Later, at the end of the retreat, a number of people commented that they found it helpful and useful. But my experience was of, oh my God, I suck so much. And like, what the hell was I doing? Why am I even up here? What is this? I don't know what that means. And I had like things that in my mind were going to be laugh lines, and I would deliver them, and everybody was just sitting there. Which some of the teachers in Boundless Way would prefer you do during their talks. But one of the things that became clear to me is that I don't like that at all. And because in our culture, that reads as, you know, disrespect and inattention and boredom. And I do not have the intestinal fortitude to be able to just talk naturally while everyone's. So, thank you for looking at me and responding. And then after the talk, I was just, you know, the talk ended. It was like, meant to just take up a little partial period. And then I went back to Zazen, interviews started, and I was just sitting there, and I was just seething in this ball of self-hatred. I was just hating myself, and I just sucked. And this went on for quite some time, and I had an interview with one of the teachers, with David actually, and I told him, you know, my experience of, you know, God, suck, and I'm just hating myself, and he was like, okay, well, get out there and hate yourself. And I was like, I'm on it. And then as when I went back to my seat and I resumed hating myself, you know, I realized that actually was my practice. That's the thing I actually specialize in failure, in being present to my suckage, in being present to hating myself. And some people's karma is such that they specialize in attaining meditative states. Some people, you know, in mastering the sutras and the commentaries and the me, I specialize in failing. But when I realized that, I was like, oh, this is that thing I do. And then I was, and it wasn't, and that feeling of failing and of self-hatred, you know, was still there, and didn't really change. But the thing was, is that I realized that my practice, the thing that I was actually called upon by the actual facts of the universe to do in that moment, was to be present, to intimately inhabit this little moment of body, mind, and karma that comes together to make my, you know, Joshness, this little moment of Joshness experiencing self-hatred. And that's like it. And so there's a, so to just, and that's really, that's the thing about this practice that we can always depend on. That's the practice that we can always do. That's the practice that doesn't require our mind be some way, our body be some way, our karma be some way, our intelligence, our psychological disposition, our neurotransmitters be some way. This is a practice that isn't dependent on any of those things, and we can just, and the practice of being present to the actual moment that is presenting itself is the practice that we can do. It's the practice that I can do. I sometimes wish that I were a person who could, you know, attain deep meditative states or just emit compassionate auras and all these things, or just generally be a better person than the person that I in fact am. You know, I wish that but I can't. I can only be this one. The only moment that I have is this one. And when I realized that in fact my karma was such that I actually specialized in feeling like a failure. And then when my failure feeling came up, I was like, yes, that's my practice. That's what it means for me to be me. That's what it means for me to encounter this moment. And there was, and then there's a kind of patience that arises with that. It doesn't actually cause whatever, you know, mental formations, whatever karmic patterns are unfolding, you know, as boy, I really hate myself. It doesn't cause those to stop, and it doesn't change them into chocolate radishes somehow. You know, it's still pretty painful, but there's a patience that kind of can encompass it. Zazen as a kind of patient container in which all of those things arrive, and in recognizing, oh, this is what it is to be me, then that also freed me up from trying to be able from putting so much energy into the doomed effort to not have those thoughts, to not have those experiences, or to not have just sucked in the Dharma talk that I just gave, which is obviously even more fruitless because I did suck, at least as far as I was concerned, and so I got on with the business of sitting there and hating myself, being the Buddha of self-hatred. The next day, it was gone. You know, I, that particular thing as a kind of past. But and then there's a way in which our trying to suppress those things, are trying to make them, make ourselves feel differently, actually puts energy into this habit system, and kind of makes it and kind of feeds into it self-sustaining. But to just be there, my experience of just being there with it in this patient container of self-hatred of Zazen, was kind of let me also see how, of its own accord, it would pass away. That's kind of the little story stuff that I wanted to share with you guys tonight. So I'm gonna leave it there. And I think Harry may have treats for us.
Mm-hmm.
As and so as we enjoy these treats, I want to invite you to comment or share or do what carry on with our thing. So and so when you guys are you may have the experience of, man, I don't really have anything to say, you know, and who am I to say anything anyhow, and I don't really want to expose myself by talking, you know. Stick with this practice long enough and you'll be feeling that with a whole room full of people looking at you, because that actually is my experience of beginning a Dharma time or being in the middle of one. Yeah.
When I went back home, and I met my sister, whom I hadn't seen like in a year. And of course, I love my sister. But at that moment, I envied her so much for just like a second. And I thought, oh, whenever I'm next to her, I feel ugly, stupid, fat, you know, and I guess horribly, and she does it so well. And she's really sweet and nice, so there's no reason to that you could hate her more, because she's like perfect. But somehow, if I'm not with her, I love her and admire her. And if she's standing next to me, somehow I feel, oh my God, you know, she kind of makes me look bad. Of course, it's on my head, she's not saying anything, of course. And then at that second, I said, okay, I'm just gonna envy her and hate her as much as I can. What's wrong with that? Because I'm not showing it or saying anything. And I literally felt like this heat in my head, you know, like this, I don't know, getting so hateful. And then it went away. So I was like, wow, so maybe I can do this, you know, more often. Because I didn't try to push it, like you said, for the first time. I said, well, maybe it's okay. Maybe, you know, it's not so bad to feel angry.
Thank you. And this practice isn't about feeling a certain way, like compassionate or kind or something. This is a practice that is not, it's not in that category, it's not in that sphere of things. And this is a practice that we can do in any state of mind, even envy, you know, even the state of mind that other parts of the teachings of Buddhism talk about as being the sources of suffering. And indeed, they are the sources of suffering. And it's important to recognize that. But on another level, there's this practice which is unrelated to the mental formations or the quality or tone or obscurations or the judgmental term from Theravada Buddhism is defilements in your mind, and these things are regarded as defilements. silence. But in the Mahayana Buddhism of the Zen tradition, this is a practice that can include even that. And it's a practice that that we never are unqualified or circumstantially barred from being able to put into place.
But
thanks for sharing that.
I remember thinking at the time that, I mean, I used to hear you talk. I know how you do that, and it sounded
pained.
Something that just sort of thought, you know, just pondered so many times and you that it lost its freshness. But that
thank you. And so that there's a so Kate is acknowledging that on one level it was objectively not in fact an excellent talk, right?
Just heard better. That's all.
But it isn't. But it isn't the case that we need to tell ourselves that, well, I'm sure it was fine. It was like an excellent talk, and I was just, you know, it isn't the case. You know, sometimes it, you know, it's, you know, so my self-hatred probably would have come like anyhow, or maybe it might have come differently or whatever. But, well, I'm not actually looking for retroactive validation here.
It's all where the person is when they hear the talk,
right,
and not the talk itself.
One of
an objective thing of whether it's a good talk or a bad talk.
One of my teacher James's favorite sayings, which I think honestly might actually be Waldo Emerson, he says, many a sermon foolishly preached is wisely heard. Mm-hmm. And David, one of the guiding teachers that found his way, one of the things that he says about the practice of Zazen is that it's none of your business. Your practice is none of your business, whether you're doing well or poorly or had a better period last time, or it's none of your business. And there's a way in which that's like true times 10 in, you know, teaching, or talking about it, or giving an introduction to a newcomer on how to practice Zazen. It's you know.
Thank you.
also.
Oh! If there is something.
Well, but even to the moment of death, you know, I mean, there's nothing you do to prevent that moment, but when that happens and your heart responds and your energy responds, that's the 10,000 hands of an ounce of compassion. But what do we fix in that moment? Thank you so much. Let's wrap up with some